When I was a kid, I loved to read. I spent endless hours at the library, and school book order time was always exciting. Some of my favorites to read growing up were The Boxcar Children, Encyclopedia Brown, and Calvin and Hobbes. I guess I really identified with latchkey kids going on adventures and solving mysteries. One book series I never really got into was The Babysitter's Club. I never thought that much of it until a few years ago, when my friend Yumi wrote and illustrated a zine about one of the characters, Claudia Kishi.
Well, first it started out as a webcomic essay that was posted online, which then got printed into a zine. It is called Claudia Kishi, My Asian American Female Role Model of the 90s. And it is a very short zine about why I love Claudia Kishi. I'm really proud to contribute that to the internet.
What inspired Yumi to make this zine?
I feel like I was in kind of a interesting point in my life. I was 27 years old when I was working on this comic zine. So I had moved back home to my parents' house and I had just quit my last full-time day job. So I think I was beginning to really commit to becoming completely 100% a full-time serious artist. Because of those things, I was thinking about role models from childhood and why I wanted to become an artist. All those things were in the back of my head as I was thinking about why Claudia was so important to me and why, even as an adult, she was sort of this lighthouse that was guiding me to my North Star of becoming a full-time artist. And also because I think I was thinking more about the responsibility of being an artist and representing communities and racial identity. So I feel like all of those things just was the perfect storm for me to finally sit down and write this fully fleshed out, in-depth comic essay about Claudia Kishi. It just had to be done. It had to be created and talked about and put out into the world. I really did this as a labor of love. It really struck a chord in the internet community where Angry Asian Man posted it. And I feel like every few years when some Claudia Kishi think piece comes up, people tweet about the webcomic as well, which makes me really happy, where it's sort of become this internet reference point for Claudia Kishi.
Clearly, Claudia Kishi was a big deal for Yumi to inspire all this. Tons of people shared her work around, and articles about the impact of the character soon followed. What was I missing out on? I asked around to see if others had also been into Claudia Kishi, and, well, I definitely got some responses.
Oh my gosh, Claudia was the coolest.
I just loved her.
Claudia Kishi just kind of stuck in my brain for so many years.
You know? I heavily identified with her.
She did have quite the influence on me as a person and now as a creative professional.
I didn't really realize just how important of a character she was to me in hindsight.
I learned so much from Claudia. She was just so rad.
Today, we take a look at the iconic Claudia Kishi, an Asian American literary icon that was artistic, popular, and stylish, and also an inspiration and point of connection for a ton of young Asian Americans. This is Asian Americana. We're still here. I still didn't know a ton about Claudia Kishi or these books, so I went back to the person who first sparked my curiosity.
Hi, I'm Yumi Sakugawa. I am a comic book artist and illustrator based in Los Angeles.
You may remember Yumi from our first episode on Giant Robot. I figured she'd be the best person to give me the basics about Claudia and the books.
Claudia Kishi is a Japanese-American middle school character in the Babysitter's Club book series written by Anne N. Martin, which is about a group of middle school girls who started their own Babysitter's Club business. It was published between 1986 and 2000. Claudia Kishi is the vice president of this club and the only Asian American woman in this club.
So what kind of person is Claudia?
Claudia is artsy, boy crazy, really creative, Also, just I think this really independent person where she marches to the beat of her own drum, even though she has these insecurities about being bad at school or being compared to her perfect older sister, she's this really cool artsy girl that other girls look up to. Within the greater Stony Brook Middle School social hierarchy, she was one of the cool girls. She was the vice president because the Babysitters Club headquarters was in her room. And she was a cool girl who had her own landline phone in her own room, which was such a privilege. And so all of the meetings took place in her room. And because her parents were strict about junk food, she would always have junk food hidden all over her room. Like there would be a bag of Doritos behind her pillow or M&Ms in one of her drawers. And other characters in the book would always comment like, oh my God, Claudia, she eats all this junk food, but she has perfect skin.
So sure, Claudia is this artistic, popular, and stylish girl who loved candy and boys. I understand why people in Stony Brook might like her, but I wanted to better understand why Yumi felt so connected to this character.
I think I started reading The Babysitter's Club around second or third grade. Oh my gosh, I thought Claudia was the coolest character because I was this nerdy Japanese-American book nerd, and so Claudia was my first Asian-American woman role model in books, and she was artsy, like me. There were just so many similarities between us. I was actually a stereotypical Asian American kid who was really good at school, but I love that Claudia was bad at school. I just felt like I had this book character who I could claim as my own because I was like, well, I'm Japanese, so clearly I'm Claudia and Claudia is mine. And I actually had a best friend who was mad at me because I was more like Claudia than her. That just never happened with any other book character in the 90s, so I feel like I just had this extra special bond with Claudia Kishi.
Yumi wasn't the only one who felt this kinship with Claudia.
I just loved her. Maybe it's still a little unusual to see an Asian American girl really spotlighted that way, where, you know, she was obviously the main character in the book. She was like one of the key members of the Babysitter's Club. So I just remember being really drawn to that. I think it was also special because she's a character who was not defined by her struggles, really. Like, she's definitely a character who's about joy, who's about fun. It wasn't a book where the character of color was a lesson for everybody else. She got to be her own person.
That's Sarah Kuhn.
My name is Sarah Kuhn. I'm an author. I write the Heroine Complex series, which is about Asian American superheroines. I am also Asian American. I am Hapa. I'm half Japanese. And that's pretty much it.
For Sarah, it wasn't just about feeling a personal connection to Claudia. It was about the way she was written and how important she was in the series.
I started reading the Babysitter's Club books probably in middle school or maybe a little bit younger. What I do remember is that the second book is about Claudia and she's on the cover. Her name is in the title. It was a huge deal because she was the protagonist. And I really loved her because she was so creative. She was so artistic, so vibrant, so distinctive in her personality, and who really, I think, kind of busted the idea of the model minority. She was so not what we really expected to get when we saw Asian Americans in literature or any kind of pop culture at that time.
Claudia felt like the kind of character that Sarah could actually get to be.
One of the really positive things that Claudia brought for me, besides that sort of recognition of like, oh, I can actually see some of myself in this character. When I was younger, I was really obsessed. Well, I shouldn't say when I was young. I'm still obsessed with Star Wars. Of course, all the girls wanted to be Princess Leia. And I never got to be Princess Leia because I did not look like Princess Leia, even though I still think my hair looked the most like Princess Leia. It's the thickest. You could put it in the cinnamon buns. But I never got to be Princess Leia because I didn't look like Princess Leia, and I could really only be Asian Princess Leia. It always had to have that qualifier. But when we played the Babysitter's Club, I got to be Claudia. So I felt like, in a way, weirdly vindicated by that, that like finally I got first dibs on a main character that everybody else wanted to be.
Claudia's stories weren't just token attempts at representation, though. They were interesting and set a tone for the kind of books Sarah could write.
I appreciate that a lot of Claudia's adventures were very fun. And I think that influenced my writing years later because I was finally like, okay, I think I can write these books that are fun, that are Asian American girls getting to have fun and still eating bad junk food and wearing weird outfits and, you know, getting together with boys and, you know, just things like that. So I think that she really influenced me that way, but I didn't realize it until much, much later.
Sarah's current book series, Heroine Complex, is about the adventures of superheroines living life and protecting the world from a demonic invasion, a far cry from suburban babysitting.
But I guess something kind of funny is I remember when I was sort of starting to get asked about my books, like get asked about Heroine Complex and like, who were your sort of Asian American idols? Who were like the Asian American women in science fiction and fantasy that you like really identified with? And I had to think about it a lot because a lot of the characters I could think of in science fiction and fantasy were very supporting or there to sort of define the white character's journey. And I started answering with Claudia, and when people would be like, oh, it's not fantasy, I would be like, oh, but it is, because she had her own phone line in her room, which was a huge deal, which I always wanted. And she and the babysitters were always getting taken on these like elaborate trips with the families they babysat for, like cruises and like Disney World. And I was like, oh my God, that sounds amazing. So I always kind of joke about that like all these attributes were almost like fantasy to me.
And while personal phone lines and babysitting vacations were fantastical, the dream Sarah got to make real was getting to write an Asian American main character.
I think one of the reasons that it took me so long to write Asian American protagonists is because even though I had an example in front of me of Claudia Kishi, I did not realize that I could be more than a sidekick, that I could be more than a token or the only face in the room that was not a white person. You can see this path in a lot of writers of color, where initially we internalize that narrative that we cannot be main characters. I think just by being present, she made me see we can have especially fun stories that are about us, that aren't about the struggle and racism and fighting back against the man.
Speak up now and tell them your tales. The shadows can't silence the sound.
Sometimes we don't understand that significance when we first read these books as kids.
Claudia is one of those characters that, like, I never really thought about just how formative she was until I started making media myself.
That's Wendy Hsu.
My name is Wendy Hsu. I am a comics artist who has a day job in publishing, and I mostly write and draw, like, fantasy stories, and my pronouns are she, her, hers. I started reading Babysitter's Club when I was about 10 years old, because I do remember the girls being older than me and thinking that was the coolest thing ever.
Wendy even grew up in a place like Claudia's hometown.
I grew up in the suburbs of Connecticut, so it was pretty white and pretty, you know, upper middle class kids. I think Claudia was maybe the only Asian kid in her school, but I was definitely in the minority at all of the schools that I went to.
So, of course, she also related to Claudia.
I definitely empathize with how she wanted to be artistic and her getting compared to other people, especially her really smart sister. Because even though I have a younger sister, I was definitely compared to like my parents' friends' children who were doing exceptionally well in school. I did well enough in school, but I was definitely on the more artistic side.
But beyond those similarities, Wendy found a lot of meaning in another aspect of Claudia's life.
The thing that stands out the most to me about Claudia is actually her relationship with her grandma. Her grandma reminded me a lot of my grandma and later my aunt in high school who came to live with us. They were both very loving and unconditionally supportive, and they cared about my artistic side. That was something that in my house, my parents, they weren't, you know, openly encouraging, I guess. It was more like, how is this thing going to look on your college resume? But I remember this story about Claudia in this one big volume they had when they were all telling stories about their childhood. Claudia draws a butterfly as a self-portrait, and her art teacher makes fun of her for doing the project wrong. her grandma actually goes to school and like stands up to the teacher for her in this very uncharacteristic of older Asian woman. You know, she's a soft-spoken Japanese grandma, but she goes and like she stands up for Claudia. And I thought that was like the best thing ever.
Claudia's family relationships are definitely an important aspect of her character. Here's Yumi again.
Yeah, so one of the main dynamics in Claudia's family is that her grandmother lived with her parents in her house, and her grandmother's name was Mimi. So Claudia and Mimi had this really special relationship where Claudia felt like Mimi really understood Claudia, whereas her parents didn't quite get Claudia's artsiness and her creative intelligence and would compare her to her model minority stereotype older sister Janine, who was always studying, getting perfect grades, taking college level math classes, even though she was 16, had an IQ of a genius. And so I feel like Claudia was the black sheep in the family, but her grandmother totally got her.
With those kind of family dynamics, I expected more people to relate to Claudia than her sister. But then I heard a lot of people tell me,
I probably, on the surface, came across more as a Janine, the older sister.
That's Julia Cho.
My name is Julia Cho. I am an actor and a theater producer, a founding member of Artists at Play.
Julia, like the others, was way into the books.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I had every single issue of that series. I can just see it now, this like whole shelving unit in my family home, just like end to end, all Babysitter's Club.
But going back, Julia definitely thought of herself as more of a Janine than a Claudia.
At the time when I was reading these books, I was still very much quiet, shy, reserved, you know, just child of immigrants, just kind of focused on school.
Even then, Julia still had other pursuits.
But I will say, I was interested in the arts. And for a time, my secret was that I wanted to be a fine artist. You know, my mother had put me into these art classes where we were like, I think I want to be a visual artist. That was scrapped. And I remember my grandmother specifically telling me, like, if you become an artist, you're never going to make any money. And, you know, I don't completely disagree with her on that. But reading about this character who was so artistic and creative and just really involved in that side of herself planted some seeds that eventually came to fruition. You know, I still harbored my deep love for the arts, and then cut to now I'm an actor, I'm producing theater, and really pursuing my creative passions. I think I'm realizing now how much more of an impact she must have had on me, specifically in terms of my career. Claudia Kishi was definitely a part of that, allowing me to free up different aspects of who I was.
Beyond art and family, something Claudia Kishi was known for was her sense of style. Once again, Yumi.
One of the defining aspects of Claudia, every time Claudia is the main character or when Claudia is described at the beginning of the book, her fashion outfits are always described, and some common fashion accessories that come up in her outfits is that she wears Doc Martens, which are really expensive. Like, I didn't own Doc Martens until I was in my late 20s. So that's really impressive. She wore colorful leggings with ballerina flats. She made her own paper mache necklaces and earrings. Like, oh, she's wearing earrings and one ear is a dog and the other earring is a bone. Or like, oh, she's dressed up like the Flintstones where she has this bone through her ponytail. Or she's wearing a cool vest, or she's wearing these like cool flowy pants. Basically, she dressed in really fashion-forward hipster fashion styles before that was even a thing. I feel like everything that she was wearing, it's basically what hip millennial women are wearing right now. So she was like 2 decades ahead of her time.
That aspect alone made Claudia Kishi a cultural icon for tons of young readers. There's even a blog called What Claudia Wore, dedicated to her outfits. My friend Liz is one of those readers who was very influenced by Claudia's fashion sense.
Claudia definitely influenced my style choices. I remember in middle school, I had this pair of bright orange and yellow plaid pants that I called my golfer pants. And I always thought that this was like such a Claudia pair of pants to own because they were so flamboyant. My name is Liz Adams. I'm an actress and writer, comedian, improviser, and I'm Korean American. I'm from the Metro Detroit area, and I've lived in California for almost, 8, 9 years now. It's been a while. I feel like I based a lot of my life choices on Claudia unknowingly, but we also, I saw so much of myself in her.
Specifically, she saw herself reflected in Claudia's style.
The author of the books always made such a point to describe the fun things that Claudia was wearing. There was just something really cool about that, you know? Claudia is a straight up fashion icon, like the things that she would wear and like the risks she would take just because she wanted to express herself. I've always felt like a need to express myself through fashion. It can sound superficial and I get that, but it's also such a source of fun.
I know Liz from around the Los Angeles improv comedy scene, and she's always got such impeccable outfits.
Like, I've always had a really flamboyant style, and like anyone who's known me or like has seen my Instagram knows that I love like really bright, happy clothes and like patterns, and I'm just a very colorful person. I feel like I have a very bubblegum style, but also like with a little edge. My husband refers to my style as Barbie goth rock. So when I was in middle school, I had a calendar that I would write down all of my outfits on. Not a lot of people know this, it's kind of embarrassing. I would write down each outfit and make sure I wouldn't repeat any outfits within a month. And I don't know if this was like a style cue I got from Claudia, but she was infamous for not repeating styles or like putting together really like eclectic, brightly colored outfits. But I always remember that she had such a definite sense of style that she really like expressed herself with. I can't necessarily say that it was like a one for one thing that I was like, because Claudia's doing this, I am going to do this. But I feel like being exposed to that, it like gave me permission to do that because another Asian girl was doing that. And, you know, we have this model minority myth about Asian women in particular is that we're like put together and proper and quiet and polite and all these things that Claudia and I were not. And I've always been a really loud, obnoxious person. I feel like I was validated in Claudia being that kind of person, and being able to relate to her really gave me confidence in the choices I was making too, and gave me permission to make those choices.
Liz wasn't the only one to be influenced by Claudia's fashion.
I do, in hindsight, super appreciate her fashion. Every time I look at, you know, one of the old covers, I'm like, that's a good look. Like, I would wear that.
Yeah, I remember trying to, like, draw these outfits. Like, oversized shirts, like, maybe embelted over leggings and bold patterns, maybe, like, mismatched prints.
These really loud colors, these patterns that didn't really go together, but she made it work.
Dangly, big earrings, maybe, like, a side ponytail.
Like, one of the covers, she's wearing this, like, black tunic that's belted and leggings and booties. And I'm like, that's a look that's like in now, you know, I would wear that.
Like, I can't imagine this being a real ensemble. But then at the time you're like, yeah, of course Claudia would wear that. And of course she's pulling it off.
I think I really imprinted on that because I still like to wear, you know, really loud colors and clashing patterns. And I still think of her definitely as my fashion role model. I like to go back and read the descriptions of what she wore. So that was definitely very influential on me, I would say.
Sometimes, those who see themselves in Claudia do so from halfway around the world.
I think a lot of us growing up outside the US in Asia really encounter the idea of America through media. And like that really shapes our idea of what the US is before even coming here. I feel like this idea that Asian immigrants encounter race for the first time when we immigrate to the US, that's a misconception. The Babysitter's Club and characters such as Claudia Kishi has allowed like Asians in Asia to imagine like what life would be like in the US.
That's Ari.
Hi, I'm Ari Woro Wongwasu. I'm a student at NYU. I'm going to be a rising senior. I consider myself to be Thai of indigenous Mon and Chinese descent.
She also grew up reading The Babysitter's Club, but in a slightly different context.
I grew up in Bangkok, Thailand. I grew up there my whole life. But I started attending a British school when I was 7 or 8 because my parents wanted me to learn English.
I felt very alienated at school. I felt very lonely, especially going to a white British school where my parents were really pressuring me to learn good English, do well. So when I was at school, I would find all these series of books and I got hooked onto them. And one of those book series was The Babysitter's Club. When I started reading these books, oftentimes they're set in white suburbia, and there aren't many characters of color to identify with. So when I found Claudie Kishi, I heavily identified with her because she was just this like Asian girl who read mystery novels and hid snacks around in her room. I think in a way, Claudia really provided a window into what I thought America was during the time. And I just felt like Stony Brook was so different from what my school experience was. It felt like another fantasy world, like Hogwarts. It was so funny to hear about lockers or like homeroom classes. I think those books provide an escape for me. I could just go to library, pick this up, and then pretend, or just even identify the experiences that Claudia was going through.
But for Ari, there was a particular reason she wanted to look through that window of what America was like.
My father's side of the family had lived in the United States before I was born. And so he would tell me stories about growing up in Los Angeles, and I was always curious about that. Like, I always grew up thinking, like, how did my dad grow up? How did the rest of my family grow up? How did they do in school? Just their everyday life. I was reading these books as a sort of textbook of, like, how I would imagine the U.S. that my dad grew up in. I think, like, through Claudia, I could imagine myself living there through that space. I really cherish those memories just sitting in the library and just imagining, had my dad gone through the same thing or had even similar experiences growing up in the U.S.?
Ari's dad moved to the U.S. from Thailand during a wave of immigration in the 60s and 70s. He was granted a student visa and attended community college in Southern California. But as she learned more about his experiences, his story diverged from the ones she was reading in The Babysitter's Club.
The way my dad described his time in the U.S. to me was that, like, he did badly in school. He jumped around from college to college doing odd jobs until he was finally able to graduate from community college. He had a difficult time. He felt pressure to succeed just for the sake of his family. You know, later on, I did find out, like, they had a really rough time in the U.S. That's why they moved away. And I later realized, like, growing up in inner city L.A. is very different from white suburbia, which was, I believe, how Stony Brook was described. My dad worked pretty late when I was younger, so I didn't see him that much. And so that was sort of my way of trying to connect with my dad, which I'm grateful now that I'm able to later on in my life.
For many fans, this kinship with Claudia was core to her influence and inspiration. For others?
I don't even know if I ever felt an affinity for Claudia. I don't think I identified strongly with her. I really can't stress just how different I was from her in like so many respects. So it's not like anybody ever would have compared me to her. Maybe that was another reason I kind of liked her. She just didn't remind me of me in any way at all. I kind of appreciated that.
That's Nicole.
I'm Nicole Chung. I'm a writer and editor. I'm the editor-in-chief of Catapult magazine. I'm the former managing editor of The Toast and the author of All You Can Ever Know.
Nicole also grew up in a place without a lot of Asian Americans.
I grew up in Southern Oregon, a little town 5 hours south of Portland. And it was a very, very white place. Slightly less so now, but honestly, it hasn't changed all that much.
That alone could be a challenging place to grow up as a Korean American.
To top it off, I'm adopted, so my family's white. So I truly, not only did I have like no pop culture representation, I also just didn't really know anybody in real life who looked like me. I'd had like a tiny handful of Asian friends. So it was very isolating.
So Nicole always had her eyes out for anyone she could identify with.
The Asian radar was such a thing for me from a very early age because I noticed right away that like no one looked like me and my family didn't look like me and my classmates didn't look like me. So I would play this game around town, like count the Asians. Like every time I saw one, I'd like make a little mental note and I'd like wonder about them and how they got here.
And that radar went beyond just real life.
So it's probably not surprising I did the same thing in like literature and on TV. I keenly remember that childhood longing for like representation in books. I loved to read, and at the same time, it was sort of frustrating that the characters I read about almost never looked anything like me.
So I just didn't grow up reading a lot of Asian American writers. I didn't grow up reading about a lot of Asian American characters. So, I mean, of course, the first thing I just noticed was like Claudia's presence at all in the series. I was just excited at first that Claudia was there, even though she was just one person in the group.
The cultural importance of Claudia Kishi goes beyond token media representation, though. She became more than just a literary character. She's a figure who got to become a shared cultural experience and reference point for a whole generation. A symbol for how art could create new common ground.
If you're like a woman of a certain age, it was formative for a lot of us. The first series that we really got into, like keep in mind, this is before like Harry Potter. Every girl I knew read The Babysitter's Club. It was something that kind of brought us all together. It was something I had in common with all these white girls in my class too, that there was like an Asian American character in this very popular series. It did make me feel a little bit represented, even though Claudia and I don't share an ethnic background.
And the books formed a foundation for how Nicole understood what friendships could be.
I guess what I found kind of encouraging about Claudia was that she was part of this like close-knit group of friends, almost like a family. They looked out for each other and she was clearly like accepted. I had not really had a lot of friendships like that. What I internalized was that these sorts of friendships across racial and cultural lines were possible. That even if I didn't have them like at that moment, it didn't mean there weren't people out there that I could find. Ultimately, at its heart, these are stories about a whole group of young women, and they do care about and look out for each other.
And, as evidenced by all the people who spoke so far, Claudia Kishi could also be a shared icon for young Asian American women.
I've talked about this in some other like essays, and I've talked about it with fellow Asian American women, but a lot of us have these like same cultural touchstones, like Claudia Kishi, and we all have these in common. And that doesn't mean that we all like love them, but like we knew of them and we remember them. It's like a part of our childhoods, this combination of like real and fictional people who are sort of like shining examples in this desert of representation where there just wasn't a lot to choose from.
Despite all these different experiences with Claudia Kishi and the Babysitter's Club, I have to note one very important fact. Anne M. Martin, who wrote and created the series, is not Asian American. And going over the list of acknowledged ghostwriters who wrote with her throughout the series, none of them seem to be Asian American either. Obviously, they still managed to create a fun, relatable, and inspiring character, but it also means that there were some questionable descriptions along the way.
Yeah, I mean, she was always described as having almond-shaped eyes. Which is such lazy descriptive writing for describing Asian eyes.
Once again, Yumi.
So I feel like one of the recurring descriptors in describing Claudia's physical appearance is that Claudia is almost always described as having almond-shaped eyes and beautiful skin. And I feel like it's a given that Claudia is this Japanese-American character. I don't see why you have to go out of your way to describe the shape of her eyes.
Folks notice some other things too.
The way her beauty is described in terms of her almond-shaped eyes and her jet black hair and her porcelain skin made me vaguely uncomfortable when I was younger.
There was always a reference to her almond-shaped eyes and how like ethnically gorgeous people found her in general.
All eyes are almond-shaped. Nobody's eyes are perfectly round.
Pretty sure the series described Claudia as exotic more than once, so that's not great.
And I feel like these are things that hopefully people don't use anymore.
Not everyone found Claudia's descriptions totally negative, though. Here's Liz again, expanding on her own experience of reading how Claudia was described.
When you grow up around a bunch of blondes, seeing long jet black hair be described as beautiful, I feel like it's so subconscious, but it's so important to be told that. A lot of Asian girls I talk to, we grow up wishing we had skinnier noses or like blue eyes and blonde hair. So hearing her long black hair described as beautiful, that was something validating in me, I think, that I didn't even recognize it at the time.
A lot of folks explain that they didn't realize these issues until much, much later, with the benefit of hindsight. For better and for worse, how Claudia was written was very much a product of her time. Again, Yumi.
But at the same time, I feel like it was the 90s, and people just were doing the best they could in that era of multiculturalism and diversity in books. And so I'm not too mad. I feel like it could have been way worse.
And with that in mind, there were a lot of things Martin did well when it came to writing Claudia.
I feel like Anna Martin, at least for Claudia, stayed in her lane.
She was definitely not written as like a model minority sort of stereotype.
Like her parents were like second gen Asian. You know, they grew up in the States.
One of the strongest things about her was she was actually never positioned as mysterious. You always knew what she was thinking. Like, she was not shy about sharing her emotions.
And I realized that by modern standards, having the Asian American girl be the flashy, cool, rebellious one can really flatten and dehumanize a character, especially when she's written by people who aren't Asian American themselves. But in the 80s and 90s, a character like Claudia was unheard of in books, and she had agency. Sarah provides a little more perspective as a writer.
If you're writing a full character and the character has other traits and other personality things about them, then they're not really a stereotype. They're a character. They're a real person. There are real Asian girls who dress wild and who are, you know, rebellious like Claudia.
But beyond how Claudia was depicted, something that stood out to me about how race was dealt with in the books was, well, how much it generally wasn't. Yumi pointed out one story in particular that tried to tackle the issue of racism, though.
Book number 56, it's called Keep Out, Claudia. It was one of the few books that dealt with racism. Claudia and Jesse were the two token non-white characters in the club. Jesse is Black, Claudia is Japanese American. And it was just really awkward the way they would handle Jesse's Blackness in the books, where anytime the books were narrated from Jesse's perspective, she would be like, by the way, I'm Black. And so there's a new family in town, the Lowell family, and they call for a babysitter. Claudia is the first person to go in, and basically the mom just treats her weird, and Claudia just can't put her finger on why she's given these weird vibes. And then Jesse is hired, and basically the mom was like, oh no, I'm sorry, there's been a big mistake. Like, she wouldn't even let Jesse come into the house. So basically it's about how this family only wants to hire white babysitters. And I think at one point the mom even like specifically asks for blue-eyed blonde babysitters, which is so creepy.
One friend of mine in particular also noticed how rarely they dealt with Claudia's race.
But then I started thinking more about what would it be like for Claudia to be living in Stony Brook, Connecticut at this time and being one of the only Asian Americans at her school, her only family being the one in town, you know. My name's Phil Yu. I am the blogger behind AngryAsianMan.com.
Phil was thinking about that same book Yumi mentioned.
And so I remember that book and I was like, oh, it would be funny if you just like retitled that book what it should really be called. And so kind of on a whim, I did an image search for that cover. It's a photo of Claudia outside in the hallway and these three like super Aryan looking kids are like at the doorway, like looking at her. Decided to Photoshop it. So instead of Keep Out Claudia, it said Claudia and the racist little shits, you know, just thought it was funny. And so I thought it'd be one, you know, one off meme would be kind of fun and just put it out there.
But as Phil thought about Claudia's experiences in Stony Brook, he looked for more stories and covers to rethink. Soon, he was on a roll with the remix covers.
Claudia and the racist little shit. Claudia and the model minority myth. Claudia and the frustrating lack of media representation. Claudia and the whitewashing of indigenous history. Claudia Kishi, only Asian at this damn school. Claudia suspects it was racially motivated. Claudia thought she told everyone to take off their fucking shoes. Claudia and the friend who claims she doesn't see race. Claudia just realized this boy has yellow fever.
The titles are even better when juxtaposed with the original covers. Phil didn't change the original images at all, he just recaptioned them. He turns a cover where Claudia is looking at a painting of a geisha into one about a lack of media representation. A Thanksgiving play cover becomes one about whitewashing indigenous history.
But my favorite one is one where Claudia is hosting a party, and it's one of those parties that has gone too far, and the caption of it is like, someone's gonna pay for this. Claudia's sitting in the middle of the room and there's like this big party happening around her. I retitled it, Claudia thought she told everyone to take off their fucking shoes. You know, that's one of those things people can relate to. If you're Asian and it's like, you gotta take off your shoes, you come in the house.
Not everyone realized these were parody covers.
So I put all these covers out one day at a time and people just went crazy for it. Some people were like, are these real? Are these real books? Like, maybe it's people who aren't familiar with Babysitter's Club or just knew that they existed, but they're like, these are kind of woke. Every day, I thought it was going to be the last one. And then people were like really enthusiastic. A lot of people were like, this is awesome. I want that book or I want that cover. Like, how do I get this cover? You know, they were wildly popular and definitely struck a nerve, you know. And so I kind of consider it like a funny little art project, subversive little art project.
I'll put up a link to the whole series of covers on our website at AsianAmericana.com. We've heard a lot of folks share the importance of Claudia Kishi because she felt like such a unique character during a time when there were fewer known Asian American writers and characters, especially those geared towards younger readers. But has the literature scene changed since then?
I feel like it's gotten so much better. There are Asian American book characters written by Asian American creators, and there's a wider diversity of the kinds of Asian Americans depicted in the books. It seems like there's a wider breadth of South Asian and Southeast Asian authors and characters. And so I feel like there are just so many more options for Asian American readers who want to read about Asian American characters. And certainly it can always be more diverse. There is always room for improvement and more options. But certainly compared to what I had in the 90s, I feel like there is so much more, and that's really exciting to see.
Nicole agrees, especially when it comes to finding books for her own kids.
It's encouraging. I mean, we could always use more, but I've had a much easier time finding kids' books for my children than I think my family had for me growing up. You know, I have two daughters, and one of them is already at the age I was when I was reading the Babysitter's Club books, and it hasn't always been easy. But I've been able to seek out, like, a lot of different works, and as she gets older, there will be even more. It's just encouraging as a parent who's raising daughters that there is a lot more out there. I don't have to like push her toward the Babysitter's Club necessarily. Like there's just a lot more representation out there. And that's a good feeling.
Nicole told me about some of the authors and books she's sharing with her children.
Linda Sue Park, I really enjoy her books. My kids grew up reading her picture books like Bibimbap and The Firekeeper's Son is a beautiful book. Also, I think my favorite book of hers for younger readers is A Single Shard. I like Cynthia Karuhata, and I mentioned Grace Lin. We've read all of Grace Lin's books, again, picture books and then series for older readers. There's another one that my daughter just read called The Vanderbeekers of 141st Street by Karina Yan Glaser. And it's another book that features like a multiracial Asian family. And I really like that one.
Sarah made sure to add one more particularly notable book series.
I adore Jenny Han. She writes the Lara Jean books, which start with To All the Boys I Loved Before, which is super awesome. And one of the things that's really wonderful about those books also in terms of representation is it's about three sisters. Lara Jean is the main sister, but the other two sisters have like big personalities and they all have kind of different personalities and they interact really wonderfully as sisters.
Of course, in the months since I spoke with Sarah, the movie adaptation of To All the Boys I've Loved Before has become a huge hit. So you've probably already heard of it. Anyway, there's growth in other kinds of books too. Wendy Hsu's work is mostly in the medium of illustration and comics, which is something she grew up with.
I was mostly reading manga because like I grew up in the early 2000s and that's when we started seeing American comic, like American Born Chinese by Jean Yang and stuff by like Sunny Liu. I would honestly like to see more graphic novels by all authors of color because like I did do comics in high school, but I thought that if I wanted to like be a writer, I had to be like a serious literary fiction writer because like Gamey Chan and Maxine Hong Kingston was the only thing I knew. And they're both very like solidly literary fiction writers. There is definitely room for all kinds of stories.
I know there's even more writers and artists beyond the ones mentioned already. There are folks working with big comic companies like Greg Pak, Jean Yang, and Sana Aminat writing characters like Ms. Marvel, Awesome Hulk, and New Superman. Independent artists like Ti Bui, Josh Luna, Trung Nguyen, aka Trungles, Jillian Tamaki, and Derek Kirk Kim are telling their stories using the comic medium too, just to name a few. On the YA novel and middle grade book side, there's C.B. Lee, Emily X.R. Pan, Sandhya Menon, Melinda Lowe, Maureen Gu, Christina Soontornvat, and so many more that I can't possibly name them all. And of course, I'd be remiss to forget about the fact that today's guests, Nicole, Wendy, Yumi, and Sarah, have all created tons of books and stories themselves. Of course, creating a book comes with its own pressure and responsibilities.
When the first book was coming out in 2016, I had the rev sweats, which is a term invented by our friends, Phil Yu, Jenny Yang, Joanna Lee, about how when you haven't felt represented in a while and then something comes out, you're worried it's going to be bad or it's going to be stereotypical or, you know, it's just not going to be what you wanted. And I had that from the author side of feeling like I have these books coming out. They're Asian American superheroines. And I just don't know if it's going to be able to be all things to all people. I think that's impossible. You know, what I eventually came to was, one, I actually don't think it's a bad thing to have a little bit of the rev sweats if you're a creator, because it just means you care. It means you're thinking about your community and how you felt seeing yourself in media. And I don't think caring about that is a bad thing. And then the other thing was just, you know, taking a little page from Claudia and taking a page from some of the other authors with characters I mentioned. The best thing is for them to be real people with flaws and, you know, making bad decisions and just like someone you know in real life. I think that that's the most important thing versus trying to make them this like amazing, perfect paragon of Asian America, which is impossible anyway. That's kind of like how I think about it now, and Claudia helped a lot with that.
Anyway, as I chatted with folks about Claudia, there's one question that kept coming up.
I would be curious to see where Claudia is now, like as an adult. You know, what is Claudia like? What is her profession? Is she still pursuing art, or has she settled for a more stable career?
Did she go to RISD? Does she work in media now? I would like to imagine that she works in media now.
I'd be most interested in seeing like a CW series about adult Claudia, like growing up, Claudia in the city.
I hope she got out of Stony Brook. I kind of feel like she was meant for like a bigger city, right? Because she has such a big personality.
What I hope Claudia is doing is that she is living her best life in like New York City with like a loft in the Arts District, and she is painting up a storm, and she's having galleries in Soho, and her parents are proud of her, and her doctor sister is proud of her. Like, that's my hope, is that she's living her best life pursuing her creative interests.
Of course, Yumi had an answer for this.
I was really proud of one of the later parts of the webcomic where I imagine what adult Claudia Kishi would be doing. And it's funny because I was 9 years old when I read about Claudia, who in the book is a 13-year-old. And so I feel like in my head, Claudia is a woman who is one life stage ahead of me. And so I created this whole imaginary timeline where I projected into the future of like, what would Claudia be doing as an adult?
So I had to have Yumi read a bit of it for us.
And it's funny to read this because I am now 33 years old. What would adult Claudia be doing now? Best case scenario, adult Claudia is a successful fashion designer and visual artist in New York who makes mixed media paintings of her favorite junk foods. And there's a woman in a fancy dress with this much older gentleman who is talking to her. And she's saying, Claudia, I'm so proud of your first NYC solo exhibition. My husband would like to buy all the pieces. And Claudia is saying, aw, Stacy, best BFF ever. And the rest of the section, Claudia is being interviewed by this art critic columnist asking about why she uses junk food. And Claudia's answer is like, I just really love junk food. And as Claudia is walking past these brownstones, probably in Brooklyn, she sees these hipster kids wearing leggings and thrift store finds and ironic accessories. And Claudia's thinking to herself, neon leggings, oversized t-shirts, ironic earrings, been there, done that. So yes, that is my favorite section in my webcomic essay about Claudia Kishi.
I'll also post a link to Yumi's entire piece on our website at asianamericana.com.
Oh, I finally found a life alone without you. Oh, I swore I never would, I'd never see, I'd never know. I used to stand inside the gates, look outward, thinking wouldn't it be great to be free, to be whole. No wasting time for me. And I'm making mine, you'll
making the Claudia Kishi zine really brought out all these amazing responses from Asian American women who really felt seen in their relationship with Claudia Kishi.
She doesn't play by the rules. She doesn't fit in any boxes, really. And that's a person that can exist. That's an Asian American person that can exist.
And I think that's definitely what Claudia represented for me, is someone who was so unique and so specific. And she just was who she was. Claudia and other literary figures have given me permission to be so myself.
One of the most lovely things about Claudia Kishi is how she stood the test of time and how she's such a bonding factor for so many Asian American women. I love that.
Claudia directly related to my very specific experience as a Japanese American character, which I then think really shaped the kinds of stories that I want to tell and the kind of special connection that I want to give to readers, where I want other young Asian American women to be able to read my books and really see themselves.
Telling the kinds of stories that help us share our own perspectives and better understand the experiences of others, that's something I'm entirely on board with. And I can't wait to read, see, and hear all the ones yet to come. Thanks to everyone who spoke with me for this episode. You can find out more about Yumi Sakugawa and her work at yumisakugawa.com. That's YUMISAKUGAWA.com. You can also follow her on Twitter and Instagram at Yumi Sakugawa. Learn more about Sarah Kuhn and her books at Heroin Complex. That's heroin with an E, complex.com. She can be found on Twitter at Sarah Kuhn. That's SARAHKUHN. Wendy Hsu's work can be found at artofwendyhsu.com. That's artofwendyxu.com. She's also on Twitter at Angry Girl Comics. Julia Cho can be seen on TV in a bunch of places, but you can also follow her on Twitter at ThatJuliaCho. Again, at ThatJuliaCHO. You can find Liz Adams at LizAdams.com. That's LizAdams.com. She's also on Instagram at LizParty and on Twitter at Liz. Again, she's got two Z's in each of these names. Ariworawongwasu can be found on Twitter at Aworawongwasu. That's AWORAWONGWASU. Nicole Chung and her book All You Can Ever Know can be found at NicoleChung.net. You can also follow her on Twitter at Nicole_Sujung. That's Nicole_SOOJUNG. Phil Yu, aka Angry Asian Man, writes on his website, angryasianman.com, and can be found on all social media by the same name. If you want to learn even more about Claudia, my friend Sue Ding is working on a documentary about her called The Claudia Kishi Club. You can find out more at claudiakishi.club. Asian Americana is hosted and produced by me, Quincy Surasmith. Our opening song is We Belong by Magnetic North and Tayo Na, featuring Chris Ajima. The song you're hearing with these credits is We Are the Children by Chris Ajima, Nobuko Miyamoto, and Charlie Chin. The music you heard during this episode included In the Dark, Don't Go Quietly, and Fly the Coop by Priska, that's P-R-I-S-K-A, and Walk On, There She Walks Again, and Love You for Forever by Connie Lim, who currently performs as Milk, that's M-I-L-C-K. You can visit our site at AsianAmericana.com, find us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter at Asian_Americana. If you like the show, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. If you really like the show, you can become a monthly supporter on Patreon. Just click the support button on our website. Asian Americana is a proud founding member of Potluck, a collective of podcasts featuring voices and stories from the Asian American community. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for more stories of Asian Americana. Want to hear more? Check out this other show from the Potluck Podcast Collective.
Hi, I'm Marvin.
And I'm Rira.
We're the host of Books and Boba, a book club and podcast dedicated to books by Asian and Asian American authors.
Every month, we pick a book by an Asian author to read and discuss on the show.
We read a wide variety of genres, from contemporary to historical fiction, fantasy to memoirs, and crime thrillers to romance.
Some of our past book club picks are Pachinko by Minjin Lee, Sorcerer to the Crown by Zan Cho, and Devotion of Suspect X by Keigo Higashino.
We also go over what's new in the Asian American literary world and chat with some talented Asian authors about their work.
So whether you want to start reading for fun again or diversify your TBR list, we got your Asian literature cravings covered. For more info, check out our website at booksandboba.com. You can listen to us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and wherever you find your podcasts.
Part of the Potluck Podcast Collective.